Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and I want to welcome you here to the... Oops. Excuse me just a second. I'm not making any noise. Hello, everybody. This is Rick. I want to welcome you to the call today. Just 1 second to get set up here. And one of, this is the, here we go. This is the 15th of November and the subscription site Q&A call. And we just finished an EMS. If any of you guys that were listening to the EMS are on the call here, certainly thank you for joining us. This is, it was a pleasure for all of the AR staff to get to visit with you. And we certainly hope that you are doing well. Now, the first question today on our Q&A call is one about raw spots. In one of the EMS homeworks, you said that we all have raw spots and have another reason or have a reason when triggered can cause us to over-respond to our mate in non-loving ways. Also, oftentimes our raw spots fire up our mate's raw spots. You also said that the emotional response is usually faster than the intellectual response. Actually, I said it was 1/200th of a second, so it is pretty quick. And so we find ourselves in a state of emotional distress way before we can rationalize what's happening. Therefore, we can actually do anything. There's not much we can do to avoid it. Your description was clearer than mine, but I hope I got that concept. From our homework this weekend, we were asked to pick a situation where when a raw spot was triggered and dissected into the elements of emotions, thoughts and physical reactions. So we started out, but eventually the exercise evolved into a fight. You hit the raw spots again and concluded in two separate bedrooms. The raw spots I'm referring to is when I cannot be a part of a group of people when I believe that all my attempts to enter that conversation have been ignored. I react in shame and then hide. I feel unworthy, rejected, and I'm the unfaithful spouse. And this raw spot hits a very sensitive raw spot of my wife because her spot is a result of my past attitude made of withdrawal and emotional disconnection. My infidelity, my lack of tolerance, my self-centeredness. This caused her to have an emotional flood because of what she's concerned. My feelings and needs came first in spite of the week of nightmares and emotional roller coaster. I can see the benefit of addressing raw spots. The more we know that know what and where we are, the less chance that we have of misunderstanding and triggering each other down the road. But is there a safe way that we can do this work, or perhaps we should not do it at all? Is there anything at all that I can do to prevent the raw spot from being hit, or perhaps address it so that I don't throw my emotional distress, disconnection, and needs onto my wife? She already has a lot to deal with and so little to tolerate since everything blew up because of my affair. Okay, so that's a great question. And the raw spot thing is absolutely huge. I think, you know, one of the things you really want to do when you talk about the raw spot right now, I would say, is almost communicate a video of that fight where you analyze it. It's not about trying to resolve or being understood in that particular exercise. It's really far more about trying to abandon your need to be understood and trying really hard, to understand your mate. But even more than that, in this particular exercise, it's really about analyzing how we get in to find the bad guy. It's not about a right or a wrong. It's the steps that you begin to follow and like find the bad guy or the protest polka or the freeze and flee, because that cause you to ultimately kind of push each other apart. Because if you can begin to watch the dance step that happens when the raw spot is triggered, then ultimately what happens, you can see those steps and you can say, whoa, 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 we're doing our dance. I just want to try to understand. And at that point, it really is about trying to understand. Typically, when a couple is communicating, we do what's called self-centered listening. We keep listening from my own selfish perspective, trying to make a point, trying to get them to understand what is important to us and why it's important to us. And that's what we're ultimately kind of pushing on in the conversation. We're not really listening to understand. You know, ultimately, we're just trying to be understood. So I would say that, you know, when one way of doing this, a simple exercise, is let the other person talk about their experience for 5 minutes. Set a timer. They get to talk about it for 5 minutes. The other person can make no response. And when they're talking about it, all they can talk about is how they feel about it. They can't talk about how they think you feel about it or why you're doing what you're doing. They can only talk about them and why they're doing what they're doing. At the end of that 5 minutes, the other person, you set the timer and the other person talks for 5 minutes. And the other party in no way can respond, and that party has to talk just specifically about, you know, what they felt and why they were doing, but the other person, but they can't talk about you and why they think you were doing what you were doing. So it's almost like you just take turns, and then when you're done, at the end of that 10 minutes, you go your separate ways. You don't get to respond. You just get to make your point, and the other person gets to listen. Oftentimes, just the 5 minutes of talk about it, with no response, where the other person just listens, but they cannot reply, can't defend themselves. Even the person, the second person going, it's not about defending. It's just about trying to understand or trying to describe how they feel about it, what their perspective was, and how they saw it. That's the first step, oftentimes, that will kind of, not kind of, I think helps work through that. You know, I would bring that conversation group, maybe your group facilitator, if you'll have them contact me, tell them I can give them a little video called Aftermath of a Fight, and it would be an exercise the two of you potentially could do to help, I guess, work through that sort of conversation in a safe way. Maybe even your moderator could help with that. So that would just be my suggestion on that one. It's hard because those are really, you know, sensitive areas. But when you can have those conversations, it is huge. And I hope you can come to the place where you can have those discussions and not wound each other. Now, the next question, am I focusing too much on my addiction? Sounds weird, I know, but I've been listening to a lot of Mike Wells' teaching, and he's transformed my perspective on a lot of things. I love Mike, by the way. I recommend him all the time. Wells says that he never had a problem go away when he was focusing on it. It rang true for me. The focus should be Christ, not the problem. My obsessing over my problem has never gotten me freedom, to be sure. Currently, for my pornography addiction recovery, I'm attending 2 12-step SA meetings per week, another group meeting for deep sexual recovery, attending therapy for sexual addiction recovery every other week, and meeting with a pastor at our church every other week for sexual addiction recovery and with someone of the same faith. I also have accountability through phone calls and text messages daily. I journal daily, mostly on sexual addiction issues and my relationship with God, and I do some sort of daily reading. I have sometimes been praying a prayer that Wells suggested. God, I can't do anything apart from you. I ask you to take away this addiction from me, and I know that no matter what happens, you already have. I love this prayer because it shows an understanding that I'm complete in Christ and that He covers everything. This prayer should be enough prayed with a willing spirit to accept His gift in His life. I wonder if some of the things I'm trying to do for recovery are an idol in that I'm looking somewhere other than Christ for healing. I've had much better sobriety in the last few months than I've ever had before, but I still find myself doing insane things that are clearly coming out of my addiction. I'm ready for this stuff to just fall off. I bet you are. I'm tired of constantly focusing on the addiction and not looking at women lustfully and all the rest. Am I on the right track? Is there an answer to this question? How much focus on the addiction is too much. Does it just vary from person to person? Am I struggling with this the right way? I believe Christ is enough. I don't think there were 12-step programs back in Jesus' day, and I believe that prostitutes and the sex addicts of the day were able to be healed by his power. How do I move forward in Christ? Great question. And I'll tell you, you know, I don't know, in my opinion, that you are necessarily not doing the right things. In fact, if you're having better sobriety than you've ever had, I would almost say you're probably right on course. Really, in a very strange way, I'll say first off that 12-step work is not about focusing on the addiction. It's about focusing on your own defects of character. You know, how do you surrender your life daily to God? What's your own fearless moral inventory? Can you be honest with yourself? Ultimately, can you look at how you're impacting other people? Can you look daily at the places you've fallen short of being conformed to his image in step 10, step 11? Can you pray only for the knowledge of his will in my life and the power to carry that out? So even when looking at 12-step groups, I'll tell you right now, if the focus is the sexual addiction other than the steps, because the steps are steps about surrendering to God, the same thing that Wells is ultimately talking about. It's a place where there is a daily recalibration of, you know, how I'm living, what I'm doing, remembering where I came from. So, you know, one of the things you've heard me say is I feel like there has to be a daily recalibration of heart and mind that allows me to keep a right focus as I go through this thing and remember, you know, kind of just keeping my stinking thinking in front of me. When someone has had a real problem and they're having to go to a lot of meetings, the reason they're going to those meetings, and I wouldn't eliminate anything if it's working right now, is the fact that as you go every time and touch this thing and look at this thing, regardless, you're kind of recalibrating your heart and your mind. And so I wouldn't do less. One of the things that always drives me crazy is when I have a client who's on antidepressants and they got on the antidepressants, suddenly the depression gets much better. And it's because their depression is better, they think, you know, well, they don't need the antidepressants anymore because now the depression's better. But ultimately, the thing that was making the depression better was what they were doing to make the depression better. So when they quit doing that, the depression gets worse. I would say almost the same thing for you. I think that accountability, daily text messages, your groups, your pastor, all of those things right now are probably very necessary. But I would, as much as possible for you, I mean, I want you to, you need to be honest about the false self. One of the things that these groups do, I think, is it, for you as an addict, is it gives you opportunity continually, you know, talk about, to continually talk about kind of what your thoughts are, what's going on. It kind of makes it less shameful. It almost is a reprogramming. And if you've had ongoing, again, I wouldn't cut back. I would also do everything that Wells is suggesting, understanding that's ultimately the core and what you're trying to do every day. But when you go to those meetings, a la Wells, what I'd be doing is I would be participating, you know, with, you know, God's Spirit all the way through all of those meetings. I mean, literally, you know, I would do the meetings with God. And when I'm there, I would be abiding in the vine. When I'm there, I'd be focusing on him, even while I'm doing the other things. I'd be asking the Lord kind of to teach me what he would have for me to take from that particular situation. You know, I don't think that we necessarily have to be looking any other place. All I want to do when I'm doing my recovery work is still be consciously aware of God and participating with him even through that process. So I would actually use every event in your life, driving your car or washing the dishes. I mean, that's just the next event that you get to participate and try to be consciously aware of God while you go through that thing. So you move forward by, it's not so much about changing the circumstances of the program right now as much as it's about not forgetting God and forgetting Christ when you're in the middle of those other activities. It's beginning to participate with him during those activities, and I think that that will actually help you even more. for some people, honestly, as Jesus said, there are some demons that are really tough, and prayer isn't just enough. You do have his gift, and you do have his life. But for me to be safe for my mate, since I'm a human wrecking ball by nature, I've got to do what's necessary to protect her. And to do that, you know, I end up trying to do a lot of things. And some of moments I may feel are necessary, and some of them I may not feel are as necessary. But I do know that, you know, out of my love for her, that I'm going to try to do what I can to maintain that safety, because I do care deeply for her. So that's the end of our questions for the day. I want to thank everybody for joining the call, and hope that helps a little bit. Those are great questions, guys. Keep them coming. And I'll talk to you next Monday. Bye-bye.